You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, friends, it's the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool. James Edwards and Keith Alexander still in studio. Eddie's up in the green room. What was he eating? He came in wearing a muscle shirt. He had apparently just got done running. But maybe we don't want to know what he's doing.
Yeah, I think the less said about this, the better.
but he came in early tonight. You know, we've had a good couple of weeks here. Well, really, this whole year. I guess I could say that about every year. It's like your kids. You know, which one do you love the most? Which one's better? They're all great. And you love them equally. But the show this year has been very, very good. Recent weeks, months, going back to the summer with the Confederate flag being under attack and all the shows we did on that and tonight's show and just the spirit. The spirit's very palpable. And that actually leads me into my next topic for discussion this evening is that, you know, fear and despair can be very contagious in a society. But so, too, can bravery and encouragement and hope. And so we want to highlight right now, showcase, he's not on the line, but we've got a video interview that he did. And it's the bravery of Dr. Ricardo Duquesne. He is a professor of sociology at the University of New Brunswick up in Canada. He also wrote the book, The Uniqueness of Western Civilization. Now, let me tell you something, folks. If you are a professor of sociology at any university and you stand strong and you tell the truth and you don't back down, think about, you want to talk about peer pressure or you can't speak out at work or stand up. And I understand sometimes it's not practical, but if he can do it, anybody can. Now, he speaks with a thick accent, so you're going to have to really tune in your ears. But he talks about multiculturalism and Marxist bias in academia. Multiculturalism and Marxist bias in academia. Here he is, Dr. Ricardo Duquesne.
Like every academic, I was a leftist. I went to university, I did a BA, I did an MA, and then I did a PhD. And most of the books that we read were books that you might even call Marxist, outright Marxist, if not leftist in a general sense. But after teaching for about 5 years, 7 years, and really continuing to think, I mean, the left says we should all be critical thinkers, and that's what I did, critically re-examine all my values and assumptions. And I came to the realization that there was a real bias in the university against white students, against white history. That was not fair. And I also observed, as a person who continued to read, that Western civilization had many great achievements. The Renaissance, the discovery of the world. We're not supposed to use that term, but the Europeans actually discovered the world, mapped every region of the world, produced around 95% of the great discoverers of various areas of the world that nobody had seen before. And then we also had great classical composers, novelists and philosophers all the way back to ancient Greece. And I thought this side of European history was being neglected, was being dismissed, and painted in a bad light. I have been a professor now for 20 years. And one of the things that I notice, and anybody who thinks about this or learns about this will also notice it, is that we have a system of education in which it is okay to praise non-Europeans or non-whites. We understand that all ethnic groups, in fact, multiculturalism says that people that are from Africa or from India or from China, that they have pride in their traditions and that we should respect them and we shouldn't put them down. And yet at the same time that we are told that, actually if you look at many textbooks, they openly put whites in a bad light. They talk always about the bad things they did, the head tax here, the way natives were treated here when we first arrived, the internment of the Japanese. So people ask me, Ricardo, why are you so worried about this? You're exaggerating. Whites are doing really well in Canada. Professors, they may have biases, but everyone has biases. Well, I think there's a lot more to it than that. I believe that there is a willful intent to create a mindset among students so that they turn against their heritage. I believe that we are at a point at which we might have to call the university system corrupt. A willful neglect of many issues on the part of professors. As professors, we are obligated to tell the truth. This is why, in a way, I move in this direction, because I really do, I'm concerned about the truth. I'm concerned about my obligation as a professor to assess the facts, the evidence, and I think universities are not doing that. They are actually obscuring and denying the facts and obscuring the truth. What is multiculturalism? We're told over and over again that Canada is a multicultural nation. In fact, we are told that Canada, right from the beginning, was a multicultural nation. So one of the things that I tell students is that we need to make a clear distinction between being a multicultural nation and multiculturalism with an ism at the end. The difference is that you can have nations that are multicultural. Canada was multicultural. When we arrived, when the Anglo arrived here, and not just the Anglo, but people from Ireland, the Scots, Welsh, Germans, Russians, and there were natives here of various ethnic backgrounds, you could say that Canada was multicultural. But there was no multiculturalism in Canada. Multiculturalism is an ideology that came to Canada starting in the 1960s, and it accelerated in the 1970s. And it was an ideology that was imposed from above. Canadians did not ask for it. And so what exactly is this ideology? Well, it is an effort to radically transform the character of Canada in order that Canada loses its European character. Many Canadians don't know that when multiculturalism was introduced in 1971, that the ethnic composition of Canada in 1971 was 96% European. So clearly, we were not multicultural culture in the way they wanted us or to think that we were. We were, as I said before, many diverse ethnic European groups and some natives. But they were kind of pushing this ideology that multicultural, being multicultural means multiculturalism, and that means bringing the whole world into Canada, bringing people from all kinds of racial backgrounds. So at the source of it, they say, let's not talk about race, that race doesn't exist. But think about it, at the source of it, the problem was that Canada was too white and they needed to make it less white by bringing people from other racial groups. And I think this is not fair. There was no consultation, there was no democratic vote, and other nations like India, China, they have their own places. And they are racially homogeneous. China is very racially homogeneous. So is Japan, so is Korea. And so why do we have to also become completely heterogeneous and lose our European ethnic identity? I disagree with that. So in a way, what we are asking is for fairness, for a level playing field. We think it is time for European Canadians, for whites, to sit at the table and to say that we count, we will make ourselves count, and we intend to make our case, and we are proud of our history. Every people has committed crimes, and in any case, no nation has ever been created in a peaceful way. That's what history is about. And we actually think that on the whole, that Europeans act.
We're going to talk about this interview right after this. We're going to break it down. Stay tuned.
Are you familiar with the term vigor, strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example. Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right. And he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him. And believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test, free, scientifically proven today.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
I was a little long-winded in my introduction of the clip we were going to play from Dr. Ricardo Duquesne in that first segment of this hour, and so the last couple of seconds of his interview that we do have posted to our website tonight, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to check out the whole thing and watch it rather than listen to it, you can watch it at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But here's the last 30 seconds of his final answer.
In a way, what we are asking is for fairness, for a level playing field. So in a way, what we are asking is for fairness, for a level playing field. We think it is time for European Canadians, for whites, to sit at the table and to say that we count, we will make ourselves count, and we intend to make our case, and we are proud of our history. Every people has committed crimes, and in any case, no nation has ever been created in a peaceful way. That's what history is about. And we actually think that on the whole, that Europeans acted rather lenient and in a rather humanitarian way, even in the early phases of the colonization, the settlement of this nation.
All right, Keith, you know, there's this great illusion out there that's being perpetrated by just a handful of folks who run the media. I think we all know who they are. But there's this illusion that nobody thinks like we do anymore. And if you think like we do, then you're backwards and you're just a tiny, tiny fraction of the overall population, when in fact the exact opposite is the truth. We see what's going on in Europe, these parties, these movements that put nation and identity first, as it should be, are really coming into power, really shaking things up. And then over here, you know, what we're doing on this program, and there's a lot of rumblings, even the Donald Trump campaign, and it's not that Donald Trump is just some incredible
wonderkin,
never before seen type of candidate. It's just that he's so much better, what little he's given, and he is, you know, given a lot, I guess, with regards to immigration, and I like his gun policy, the Second Amendment, and I like what he's done with political correctness. So, you know, by far and away, in my opinion, Trump outpaces the Republican field, but, you know, he would still pale in comparison to, you know, people, well, like us, you know, if we had the opportunity to run for president and gain traction with regards to his overall take on the issues. But it just goes to show, you know, what his campaign shows is that people are starving for even scraps that make sense. And so you've got this professor up here, and I'm going to let you take it away. But the fact of the matter is, this illusion is not real. The reality is, people like me and you, and you tuning into the radio program tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we are still the majority. Right-thinking, common-sense, loving people are still the majority. You got this doctor up there at the sociology department at the University of New Brunswick, and he just, you know, they ask him simple questions, and he gives unapologetic and truthful answers. He wasn't over the top. It was just basic common sense, and in this day and age, that's almost incredible to hear publicly. Privately, not so much. People agree with us. Publicly, people who speak out, we need more of them. This guy's doing it, and it just goes to show. You never know where they're going to be, but here's one in the sociology department at the University of New Brunswick. He did a great job.
Well, to answer the question, where are they? My answer is everywhere. This is hearkening
good
back
point
to Spiro Agnew's silent majority theory that was expounded in the first Nixon administration.
And Trump is using that term, interestingly enough.
Right. There is a majority of people. Quite frankly, we're the majority. Anybody that has, not only are we not a small minority thinking as we do, basically anyone with a remnant of common sense, if the common sense hasn't been totally boiled out of them, or if they've totally renounced it and gone over to the dark side, if you're not one of those two minor sets of people, you believe what we believe. What you don't do is, a lot of people don't have the courage of their convictions. They don't have the courage to proclaim what they really think, and they, or else they haven't shed the political correctness that's in the air we breathe and in the water we drink. You have, if you haven't thought about subjects deeply, and we here at this program have on almost all subjects, you have a tendency just to devolve out to the standard line that society gives you via political correctness. And that line is almost always false and misleading. But you know that if you announce that viewpoint, if you own that viewpoint as your own, then you will not be pilloried, you won't be castigated, you won't be vilified. But on the other hand, we stand for the common sense of the common people. That's what we have. That's why I'm not at all concerned about these so-called phony neoconservatives that want to complain and bark all the time that Donald Trump isn't a real conservative. Yes, he is, and you're not if you're a neoconservative. Donald Trump, I'm not worried about whether he's belonged to any particular conservative organizations or has shown up at conventions or yada, 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 all that type of stuff. In my opinion, conservatism is nothing more than common sense. And he obviously has a lot of common sense, or else he couldn't have heard as successfully as he has in the hostile environment of the business world and been such a resounding success. He knows how to get things done. And we need someone in the White House who, one, knows how to get things done, and two, is a game changer. He's not going to be dependent on the usual suspects and the usual cast of technocrats. He'll be able to get his own people, he'll have his own opinions, and he knows how to put them into practice. He's our only hope for real change, folks, in my opinion.
And since you brought up Trump, we can update people on the latest polls. I've got this app here on my phone from RealClearPolitics.com. Updates me every day on all of the election polls. You can put as much stock into them as you'd like. But one thing is for sure, Trump is leading all of them still to this day. And whether it's the Iowa presidential caucus or the national 2016 Republican presidential nomination, the only one close in most of these polls, now some of the state polls vary to certain degrees, but on a national level, the only one close has been Carson. And I would direct you also to the politicalcesspool.org this week, where we reposted an excellent article from American Renaissance. It was originally posted there. I liked it so much, I captured it and reposted it to our site. And it talks about the Ben Carson money machine and what's behind him and who are the people behind the Ben Carson fundraising juggernaut. It's a real interesting article. Now, it doesn't just attack Ben Carson necessarily. It does point out some inconsistencies. But with regard to who he is versus how the media is presenting him. But it's just it's a really enlightening piece. It's something that I haven't read before, and it talks about how they raise his money, and it's just well worth a read. But anyway, check that out. But getting back to the topic at hand, Ricardo Duchesne, it just goes to show, folks, you stand up, you speak out, you inspire others, and who knows what can happen. You're probably asking yourself, or maybe it crossed your mind, who conducted that interview? Well, I'll tell you that after this break, but we're going to let Keith wrap it up because this is his last segment with us tonight.
We played this for a purpose. Who would think that lurking in the sociology department of some university in the Atlantic provinces of Canada, there was a true, authentic conservative voice in the sociology department, no less? That's what gives us hope. That's the wind under our wings. We know that there are people everywhere that think like we do, even in the most unlikely places.
Well, that's right. And it's like, well, everybody knows the political cesspool. Everybody knows some of these other organizations that have been out there forever, some of these individuals out there like Pat Buchanan, the usual suspects. Well, what's really great is when we can present to you. Now, I knew about Ricardo Duchesne. He actually writes, you know, it's not surprising that he knows Kevin McDonald, I guess, the two most honest professors in North America know each other. Ricardo Duchesne has actually written some articles for the Occidental Quarterly, which is edited by Kevin McDonald, but he's not an institution like McDonald, so perhaps you haven't heard of him before, even though his work is certainly on par with the best of the best. And so anyway, you know, it's always encouraging when you can break out of quoting people like Buchanan, who you know is solid on the issues, and go with introduce somebody who's doing great work and in a position of power and influence that maybe you didn't know before. And I think we've done that tonight. We're going to shift gears when we come back, so stay tuned.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin, just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Listen, do you hear that sound? It started low, but it's getting progressively louder. Into a crescendo, even louder. Irresistible, ending in an ear-splitting blast of mass disruption. That's the sound of America's economic and political systems crashing to the ground. But we have a plan. We will be ready to restore political sanity. We will be ready to answer the call of productive America. We will restore America's industrial base and put America back to work. We will shut down political correctness and restore decency and positive media to America. We will save our Constitution, our traditional way of life, our customs, and religion. We will restore sound money and crush the debt-based system of monetary slavery. And we will end America's foreign misadventures. We are the American Freedom Party, and we have a plan. Learn more about us, theamericanfreedomparty.us.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the political cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQOnline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQOnline.com. Subscribe now.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I want to thank Keith Alexander for his service to humanity tonight with his contributions to tonight's live broadcast. Andrew the Bombardier Miller in now with me for the second half of the show between now and 9 o'clock p.m. Central Time. I want to wrap up one last point about the Ricardo Duchesne video, which we played over the air. He was interviewed by a group that has just come online, just sprang into existence, a Toronto-based group called Students for Western Civilization. Now, there have been other college groups, white student unions, and things like that. It's not unprecedented, but this is a group that has a mighty fine website, looks very well refined, and appears to have a good head on their shoulders based upon everything that I can gather. The Students for Western Civilization, according to their website, studentsforwesterncivilization.com, is based out of Toronto, and it's comprised primarily of students and alumni of Toronto universities. But young people across North America are encouraged to contact us. That's what they write, studentsforwesterncivilization.com. Always like to help out new organizations, because at one point the Political Cesspool was a new entity and a new broadcast, and we needed help, and we're here to serve, and we're here to use this venue in the mainstream media as a showcase for people doing good work on good issues. And just to quickly tell you the goals of this group that provided that interview with Professor Ricardo Duchesne, Students for Western Civilization, they write, "Our goals are to genuinely explore ethnic and cultural politics in a forum which does not exclude rightist or conservative perspectives. Number two, to organize and advance the interest of Western peoples. Three, to promote and celebrate Western civilization." So here, in very liberal Toronto, you've got a group of good kids doing something that takes courage and that will certainly probably get them a negative reaction from most of their professors and from any media that covers this, but they're doing it anyway. And I was there at one point. You know, I started this show when I was 24 years old, and here I am, 35, and still going strong. That's actually Eddie over there rustling in the leaves, if you're wondering, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, I've been there, and I'm excited to know that as time marches forward, more and more groups like this are coming online, and be sure to check them out, folks, and tell them we sent you. Okay, Eddie is in here now, and one thing we're going to talk about here at the top of this segment, and perhaps going into the next segment, is the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. It has been reached, an accord has been made, and of course, it's bad for me and you and the rest of us real Americans. Hunter Wallace covers it at Occidental Dissent. I'm glad Eddie walked into the studio tonight and wanted to talk about it. Here is what he writes, and then I'm going to toss it over to Eddie for an extended commentary. I'm going to let Eddie hold court here. "As expected, a deal has been reached on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is the largest so-called free trade agreement in history." This story from the New York Times reads, "The United States, Japan, and 10 other Pacific Basin nations on Monday agreed after years of negotiations to the largest regional trade accord in history, an economic pact envisioned as a bulwark against China's power and a standard setter for global commerce, workers' rights, and environmental protection." Now, when those terms are used by the New York Times, you know, understand the gist. So now the door is open for China to join later on down the road, though. At the same time, Obama has not ruled out the idea of eventually bringing China into the TPP, saying that Beijing had put out feelers about joining the pact. Hunter Wallace concludes with this: The Republican-controlled Congress gave Obama fast-track authority to negotiate these free trade agreements over the summer. Under fast-track, Congress surrendered its power to amend trade deals. Can you believe this, ladies and gentlemen? And a simple 51-vote majority is all that was needed for the passage in the Senate. The previous free trade agreements, NAFTA, CAFTA, Peru, Colombia, Chile, South Korea, worked out so great for the American middle class and working class that Washington lobbyists decided that we needed more of them. Aside from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, keep an eye on the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas, which will cover the Western Hemisphere, the Transatlantic Free Trade Area, which covers Europe, and there's going to be more of these gargantuan free trade agreements coming down the pike. Before it's done with, everyone you know will be trying to become a dentist, a nurse, or a firefighter. Eddie, what do they mean by free trade?
Well, if you know, I'm really good at rambling. I got to say something before we get started. I would like to take my hat off and salute Miss Dani Edwards. That is the most precious little lady I've ever seen. I've spent the last hour or so in school, homeschool with Dani, learning things like that. And she's just a wonderful lady. I would like to add that in there. And me and James, if Keith has said many times before that we're real people, we have a real love for each other. And I'd just like to let you know that's what I'm doing, what I've been doing. Okay, here we go. Here we go. This treaty you're talking about, it's going to, here's what it's going to do. It's going to make NAFTA and GATT look paltry. If you want to see what NAFTA and GATT's done, look no further than Detroit, James. You see what a shining jewel in the crown of America
I think certainly Detroit has problems above and beyond. They have a demographic problem above and beyond the treasonous trade agreements, but certainly there's no doubt about it. These trade agreements decimated industry in Detroit.
Well, the industry, when the industry shut down in Detroit, Lansing, Michigan, places in Indiana, in the industrial belt, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, we don't make anything in this country anymore except babies, colored babies. We make no automobiles here. We do not produce steel here anymore. Look what we used to have at one time, the belt, what we used to call Tobacco Road up here in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, that manufactured all the textiles. We were the textile manufacturers of the world. They're all gone. And what James kind of mentioned, I don't think he probably emphasized it enough, with this new trade deal, you can just kiss what little was left of our Congress, of our congressional representation, goodbye. What we're going to take our orders from now is a vast conglomerate of transnational corporations, James. They have a board, and they are going to not only are they going to overrule Congress, they're going to dictate to Congress what is going to go on in this here United States of America. And it's just another. It's a bigger and better, more dangerous new world order, one world government entity. It's Keith mentioned the other night the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations. They're non-governments, but they are government. They're what I would term as a supra government entity, and that they have power above all the nations of the world. This new treaty, this national board, they will exercise authority over the United States, over Canada. All these nations that James just mentioned, they will take their marching orders from these transnational corporations, who the transnational corporations in turn will take their marching orders from the international banks, the central banks of America. And and that's what you see. And you see most of what we're going to go into the next hour to the church. You'll see all the church leaders ballyhooing this, talking about what a wonderful, wonderful thing this is. It's going to bring trade and jobs to America. Anytime you hear, especially in the past 50 years, anytime you hear the term free trade, hang on to your job. They talked about...
That's right.
Yeah, because you know what? They're going to get your job. I'll tell you an anecdotal story. I have a friend of mine who's a very eminent physician in Alabama. He grew up in Tennessee. He had three clinics in Alabama. He still got three clinics. And he was talking about, we used to debate this almost to fists like we did when we were kids, how wonderful it is we have China. We can't compete with China because they're such good workers, just like the Mexicans are such good workers. until, guess what happened? Guess what happened, folks? Now we have hospitals here in America. We have radiologists that can take, snap a picture, and fax the radiologist, fax the x-rays, fax the MRI to someplace like Bangladesh. We'll have a radiologist over there who will read it, who's making like 5%, 5 cents on the dollar what a radiologist is making here in the United States, and he will fax his results back. Not only that, so we have people like my good doctor buddy having the, you know, his knees cut off from under him. We have corporations like IBM sending whole plane loads of their people on their payroll, sending them to people like India, places like India, you know, to Mexico, God forbid, where else, to get surgery. Because you can go to India and you can get, you know, bypass surgery there for what, you know, for 20 cents on the dollar, what you pay here. So that's what you, but, you know, if it goes bad, you know, who are you going to complain to? We don't want to think about that.
Well, when we come back, folks, we're going to wrap up a quick word on trade, and then we're going to talk about guns for a second, particularly how they apply to what happened in Oregon earlier a few days ago. And then in the third hour, folks, hold on to your hats. We're going to prove to you that George Soros is funding one of the most influential evangelical groups in the country. Stay tuned.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Quick final word on this trans Pacific Partnership trade deal, which is horrible for the American people, horrible for America. It's good for everybody else. It's good if you believe that their ultimate goal is to bring down America to help hasten a new world order. And I don't believe that's conspiracy, folks. I believe that that's absolutely true. That's absolutely what they're trying to do. And as Eddie mentioned during the break, this deal was absolutely opposed by the vast majority of American voters, yet they still so stupidly go in and vote for just about every incumbent come November. But, you know, the low,
well, sure, the two evils, of course.
Low intelligence of the voting public cannot be discounted here. But, you know, it's not free trade, or it is free trade. It's not fair trade, not fair trade for the American worker. And, you know, I certainly don't like at all what this country has become. I almost shiver to see the American flag when I think about what that flag stands for now in Obama's America. But I still want what's best for my countrymen. And this deal is just a horrible deal. And we're going to have more places like Detroit as demographic trends continue in that direction and as they continue to decimate our manufacturing and industrial base. We don't manufacture anything in America anymore but movies. All right, but here's the thing about guns. So Hillary Clinton, Eddie, was on some show this week, and you know how Bill Clinton was famous for fake crying? You know, Hillary Clinton is a heartless you-know-what, and I really think she is not capable of human emotion, but she pretended in a very poor, you know, she did a much better job.
She's scary, James.
She did a much better job of acting on her Saturday Night Live skit recently than she did in this supposedly real, you know, moment where she was crying over the victims in Oregon who were shot by this undoubtedly drug addicted.
What a farce. You know what, James? You know what? This goes back, James. You remember Rahm Emanuel saying, never let a good tragedy go to waste. We've mentioned that on this program several times. That lying, hypocrite witch, you know.
Closer on your mic. No, you're not on it enough.
Oh, okay. You know, that lying, hypocrite witch. Excuse me, people, for not getting too close enough to the mic, but I'm going to try it again. Anyway, she relishes the opportunity to make political hay out of every single tragedy like this. She certainly does, because then she can get on her soapbox and start preaching the absurdity that if we could get rid of the guns, and if, you know, people, what guns is she talking about? There was no guns on that campus. There was not one gun that the instructors had. There was not one gun that the students had. If those students had been armed, James, that would have been a dead criminal. And let me tell you something else, people. Why do you think the government wants to disarm you? Are you going to trust a government that, you know, this one? You know what? Are you?
We say it was a dead criminal because of a gun, just entirely too late. But
that's
go
right.
Ahead.
The gun was entirely too late. The gun. The people should have had the guns, just like our God-given rights tells us that we should have. You know, are you going to trust a government that doesn't trust you? Let me tell you this. I'm going to make this quick.
That's a good question.
Go back to every – never trust a government that fears you. Never trust a government that fears your gun. I mean, who do they think they are? They're our servants. We're not their servants. But go back to every case in history. If you can read any one work, read The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. That will tell you all you need to know about what happens when the government, when a tyrannical government – gets the guns. And why do they want to disarm you? In every single case in history,
yes,
go back as far as you want to go, the first thing a tyrannical government does when they get into power is they want to disarm the people. And I don't want to get on Nazi Germany, because Nazi Germany was like Mother Teresa compared to the communist Jewish-controlled Russia. And this is a quick aside. That's the reason we're so fond of browbeating Hitler and the Nazis, because they weren't controlled by the Jews. In Nazi Germany, they kicked the Jews out, just like Putin has kicked the Jews out of Russia. Well, the Jews totally had control of Russia, just like Winston Churchill said, the Jews had the Russians by the hair of the head and was shaking their brains out.
And it's interesting that you say that, because it is true what Eddie's saying here, not defending anything, but just bringing out a point, is that the only atrocities in recent history that we ever remember were the ones they say were committed by Germany. But everybody else apparently gets a pass. You know, no, in fact, there have been no other barbaric or brutal dictatorships except for Hitler's, they say. And but this thing about guns, though, you're right.
They disarm the people every time. Every single time, James, the first thing they do, they come in and disarm the people. Why? Ask yourself that, people.
And you look at in the cases where this has occurred throughout history, and this was the point I was going to make, and you brought it up, in the places where this has occurred throughout history, and I'm not just talking about the last 100 years. I'm talking about all the way back as far as recorded history is concerned. When we have an unarmed population, what happens to them almost invariably? What happens every time? They get persecuted.
That's right. Look what happened in Jerusalem in 70 AD when they disarmed the Jews, and rightfully so there. But, I mean, it's every single case. You have to ask yourself. I'm going to ask James. James, do you fear yourself if you have a gun? James, now,
I want to answer that question, though. You know, I was very lucky. I was lucky for a lot of reasons when it comes to my upbringing, that I was raised in a Christian household, that I was loved by my parents and was taken care of and, you know, all of that. But one of the things, you know, from one of my earliest memories is that my dad was always very proficient and very safe with guns.
Thank God.
And he took me shooting at Top Brass. It's still out there. Top Brass out of Millington. It's a shooting range. I can remember going shooting nearly as old enough as I can remember walking or talking or all of that. And I remember just as a very young boy, maybe 8 years old, 10 years old, going out and shooting with my dad. And, of course, it was all very safe. And he taught me all the, you know, proper ways to handle a gun and how important it is, you know, what to do with a gun and what they're for. But this comes from Sam Bushman. You know, folks, we're here once a week. Sam does this every day, Monday through Friday. He's got a great show, Liberty Roundtable, libertyroundtable.com. He was talking about this issue with guns. And, you know, my dad always – it's really a common sense thing, and you can arrive at the conclusion of common sense without it being taught to you in a lot of cases. With guns, I would like to think I would have come to a common sense conclusion whether or not my dad raised me right or not.
That's a revolutionary statement.
But, you know, everybody – it seems easy to understand that people who are – going to commit crimes will get a gun and commit a crime whether there's a law in the book or not. If you're capable of murder, you're capable of breaking a gun control law. It would stand to reason. So really the only people who are going to be negatively impacted by these laws are law-abiding citizens who would use guns properly.
That's the whole point, James. They want to disarm the law-abiding citizens so they can run roughshod over us, so they can
answer Sam's points here. This was from his show, some of his talking points from the Liberty Roundtable show a couple of days ago. More guns equals less crime. If guns are the problem and not the solution, then why did the cops arrive on that campus in Oregon and start out with the use of guns? You know, if guns were not the solution, why do cops have them? Why do cops have no arrival?
I'm so glad
Should
Sam
cops
asked that.
Have guns and law-abiding citizens be denied self-defense solutions? And finally, guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens saves lives. According to the evidence, every mass murder in recent times has been stopped with the gun, or they ended up taking their own lives.
Has.
So go ahead.
Well, I would like to start off on that. You know what, people? When seconds matter, when seconds matter saving your life, the police are only minutes away. I'm so glad Sam asked that question. I would like to answer that question with a question. Why is it that the American people, and especially the brain dead Baptist, well, not all the Baptists, but the brain dead, well, let me just go back to
leadership.
The leadership. Why is it that they worship the uniform? I have worn a uniform myself. I mean, by, you know, force, I will admit, but I wore the uniform.
Still gives you some credibility.
Yeah, did I become a saint when I put on a uniform? Why is it with American people, when a man puts on a uniform, be it a black stormtrooper SWAT team uniform, why is it all of a sudden he's a saint and cannot make a mistake, and he can be trusted with a gun to guard your family? Like I said, he may be an hour late after you're dead, but he's going to come. Now, why can you trust him more than you can your own father or your own mother or your own self? Why is that? That, you know what? That's a call cognitive dissonance. You can't, you know what? You can't be sane and think that. I like to go back to this. In Ukraine alone, the Jews killed from 6 to 12 million people. They starved them to death. Pushing the Russians, you know, they were leading the Russians. It's common knowledge. The Jews and communism is one and the same. Even the Jews will tell you that. Communism and Judaism, same thing. Stalin, they think Stalin killed 60 million of his own people in Russia from the early, you know, 1930 on to 1940. He purged his whole army.
What do you think he did it with? He did it with guns. But what did he do before he killed them with the guns? He took the people's guns away from them. Why do you think he wanted to get rid of the people in the army that weren't loyal to him? He wanted to get the guns out of the hands. People, you have to have a gun to defend yourself. Let me ask you this. I have a friend here in Memphis that I run with. He has a big running organization. His advice to the people that have been getting mugged here in Memphis recently was to get you a whistle. Get you a whistle. Get some pepper spray. Well, people, I replied to him, I ain't going to have no stinking pepper spray. I'm going to have my Ruger 45 ACP and two spare clips. And that's what I'm going to be spraying, my friend. Screw that pepper spray.
And you go back to the time, you know, my dad was born in 1954. I know you're a couple of years older than him. But back then, everybody had a gun, kids, grown-ups, whoever. And was society safer then? Now, it's not just that we have more restrictive gun control laws. There's a lot wrong with society that's leading to these murders, and it's the media, it's the lack of God, it's just everything all wrapped up into one. But when we had a more well-armed society, proficient with the use in firearms, was America safer in the 50s or is it safer now?
And James, you nailed it. A lack of common sense.
We got to take a break. We're going to prove to you in the third hour, though, as we shift gears one more time, what's going on in evangelical circles.